Interesting week covering the Big 12 meeting about expansion in Knoxville as the Tide put the Vols in their place last week. Chance to hunker down and absorb a lot of action this weekend. Catch his work for USA Today online, usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter at George Schroeder. George, how you doing today?
Man, I'm great, Steve. How are you?
All right. You know, you've mentioned in recent weeks that despite the reputation and all they've accomplished with four national titles since 2009, that this could maybe be a standard-setting Alabama defense. I know they gave up some points to Ole Miss, but man, that game this past weekend, especially in the first half, Tennessee ran 35 plays, had 41 yards. How dominating was that performance?
Well, it was really dominating. Now, I want to say a couple things. Tennessee's down 10 starters, 10 guys who've started, not all on offense, obviously, but offensively they were down several people on the offensive line and lost a starter early in the game, and I don't think they really had a chance.
Okay.
That said, they weren't beating Alabama that night. They might have scored a little bit more. They might have held the score down a little bit. But Alabama's defense is really, really good. And what's interesting to me isn't that they're good, because – Nick Saban has built several different really good defenses over his time at Alabama. What's interesting is they're built differently now. He has, over the last three or four years, he's changed his recruiting emphasis. He's recruited leaner, frankly, smaller guys who are faster. And you really see that in the defensive ends and linebackers, who used to be sort of giant, really big guys who were great stopping the run in a phone booth, but it was tough when you spread them out, and now he's got guys who can run a little bit better than he did, and so they're built to try to stop that fastball spread game that Nick Saban hates so much on, and of course he's running it now on offense.
Now, there are actually questions about that offense. They have a freshman at right tackle, sophomore at guard. Would Blake Barnett be in there? And now it's a freshman, Jalen Hurts, the top two backs, a freshman and a sophomore. Is that kind of the scary part with this defense? Now the offense under Lane Kiffin maybe starting to find its groove as well?
Yeah, this particular offensive line is not the best they've had, certainly up the middle where they – lost Ryan Kelly at center, and they're really not as good there. And so this is a good time for them to go full-on spread, kind of like they did a little bit 2 years ago when they had Blake Sims running behind a different offensive line that wasn't as good as they'd had the year before. But you mentioned it. You're right. They've got a true freshman in Jalen Hurts, who is the first probably truly potentially elite dual-threat quarterback that they've ever really recruited. He's not elite yet. He's not a great passer, but he's really good with the football in terms of running the zone read, whether to give it or take it. And when he takes it, he's really good at sort of setting people up and running, and he's fast. And he's got uncommon poise, I think, for a true freshman. He's the son of a high school coach. It's frankly pretty scary when you consider putting a guy who might develop into an elite mobile quarterback running the spread with Alabama type of athletes. You mentioned the running backs who are also young. It ought to be frightening, because that offense is hit and miss right now, but it's a big play offense. And with the cushion that they get from their defense, they're able to be hit and miss. And when they hit it, it's like a three-run homer. But wait till they get consistent, which I think is going to happen, because I think Jalen Hurts is only going to get better.
Now, this Texas A&M game, the Aggies were picked fourth in the SEC West behind, obviously, Bama, then LSU and Ole Miss. They haven't lost. They had that win against UCLA, won at Auburn, the wild game against Tennessee. Kevin Sumlin's got his mobile quarterback in Trevor Knight. And, Vegas says Bama easy by 17. What kind of shot do you give the Aggies on Saturday?
Well, I wouldn't bet against Alabama. I mean, if I were a betting man, like some people I know, I wouldn't bet against Alabama. But I probably wouldn't bet that game, because that's a crazy line. I mean, could Alabama do that? Absolutely. But, these games, first of all, Texas A&M's pretty good, and their defense is pretty good, and they've got two defensive ends. It might be the finest pair of defensive ends in the country. Myles Garrett may go number one, top five probably, on the one end, and Deshaun Hall, if he comes out early. And Deshaun Hall is a really good defensive end on the other end. They've got a shot to contain that offense with their defense. And so that's the one thing. And the second thing I would say is these games aren't played on paper anyway. They're played with 18 to 22-year-olds with varying emotions, regardless of Nick Saban's process or the Oregon way or whatever. You know, everybody's got their spin on it. You can try to create the same atmosphere and the same performance every week, but emotions play a toll too. And this will be week three of a tough three-game stretch for Alabama. They blew out Arkansas, but they kind of struggled defensively. They blew out Tennessee in a really big rivalry game and played really, really well. And now you got to wonder how they're going to play against Texas A&M in the third game of this gauntlet. And I think, you know, am I picking Alabama? Absolutely. Do I think they could blow out Texas A&M? Sure. Do I think Texas A&M could easily win the game? Yes. I think that could happen too.
And then, of course, Bama's got the bye and then what looks like a pretty winnable schedule out.
Right.
As we continue with George Schroeder, USA Today. Next up, Nebraska. They stayed unbeaten. They held off Indiana. They got wins against Oregon, Illinois, Northwestern. You wrote about it. They took exception to some comments on ESPN's Game Day about, you know, the caliber of the opponents they've beaten. But so at this point, would it be accurate to say, nice job so far, we're going to put you in the maybe file?
Well, yeah, I think so. And the good news for them is, and I compared them to 2015 Iowa, which made fans of Iowa and Nebraska mad at me this week. So live and learn. But, you know, I'm kidding. I think that's a fair comparison at this point halfway through the season. The difference is, first of all, the win over Oregon was a better big-name win, although, as it turns out, Oregon's not very good. But it was a better win than anything Iowa had, I think, probably halfway through the season. And the difference that's coming up in the second half of the season is this, where Iowa's schedule, through no fault of the Hawkeyes' own, missed all the big boys in the Big Ten East, which is where the better division was. And you know, they didn't play any of them until they played Michigan State and played well in the Big Ten Championship game. You know, we're only a couple weeks away from Nebraska playing Ohio State. And so I think we'll have a pretty good read on the Hawkeyes at that point. And so, you know, I think that's a little bit of a difference. But for right now, I think it's a fair comparison. They're 6-0, but you don't really know how good they are because of the schedule.
Yeah, and you mentioned not only do they play at Ohio State, the week before that is at Wisconsin, and they end
right.
at good Iowa.
Point.
So reality's coming their way, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, over the years, I always ask you about certain coaches because you make the rounds, you talk with almost all of these guys, and obviously you spent a lot of time here. I got to know Mike Riley. I always thought he was a top-notch guy. And while we mostly look for the story, the interesting angle, and try to avoid the word rooting, I've always found him to be one of those coaches you want to see good things happen to. I know you spent a lot of time here and got to know him as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know anybody that doesn't like him, you know? I mean, I don't know anybody that doesn't think he's a very smart person and a very smart, good football coach either. The question is it going to work out? And I think that's, you know, it's an open question and it's trending the wrong way at this point. You know, but I don't know anybody that would wish ill on him at all. I mean, can you name anybody that you've ever talked with?
No. Occasionally during Civil War week, some insane Oregon fans. But among the rational people I know, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the thing. I mean, you know, just sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and we'll wait and see what happens.
All right, now you got to cover the Big 12 expansion meetings. Dateline, Grapevine, Texas. Quite a process. 19 programs, I guess, interviewed, and no one made the cut. I listened to you with Dan Wolkin on the Football 4 podcast, and the question was interesting. Is this part of a process? I mean, is it over now? From your chair, what are kind of the factors that landed us here, and is this it for the immediate future or the long-term future?
For the long-term future, I mean, they're not expanding. That's not going to happen. That's a done deal. You know, there were some goofy things where David Boren, the Oklahoma president, during the press conference would say things like "never say never," but he was just basically saying, you know, the landscape could shift and we could reopen it at that point, but it's never until the landscape radically shifts, and then you see what happens. But You know, and I actually think they went about it all wrong, and but came to the right conclusion at the end.
Okay, that's interesting. You guys hit on an interesting aspect of this story, that the Big 12 commissioner, Bob Bowlesby, seemed to favor expansion. And I think the consulting firms they hired were also in favor. Then we right. hear the conference was unified in this decision. Is that kind of like window dressing, or maybe behind closed doors they decide, look, this is the way we've got to present this?
Everybody always says in these kind of situations, this is the way we've got to present this. It, you know, let's present it as unanimous. It may or may not have been unanimous in many cases. In this case, it wasn't, and I don't know that anybody really believed that it was. There were clearly some schools that favored, you know, the idea of expanding. And there were clearly some schools that were opposed to it. And when it turned out that the nays, I guess, had more than the ayes, then they went. Then all of a sudden, then you realize, okay, then we're not going to have this deal where we ever show that it was 6-4 or whatever, you know, whatever it was. We're going to say we all agreed, and this is the consensus that we've reached, and it was unanimous, and we'll just basically say we never even took a vote. And that might actually be literally true, but everybody knew where everybody stood. So, you know, I mean, look, Texas and Oklahoma ended up opposed to it. So right there, there's two. And by the way, you had to have an 8-vote supermajority, 8 out of 10. So theoretically, if you could have gotten everybody else on board, you could have outvoted Texas 8-2, but that would have been a bad vote for the future of the Big 12 conference if you'd have outvoted Texas 8-2 on something. They were the two. I don't think it got there. I think there were a couple other schools that were on the Texas Oklahoma side as well.
One final thought, and it was actually something I heard. When you looked at the list of 19 schools, maybe with Houston because of how they look now, Rice in the state of Texas, somebody says, is there any logic to it came down to there wasn't really a team or two that really looked like they would have enhanced the conference?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. That's definitely it. And look, part of the calculus when it came to David Boren, the Oklahoma president, who was the guy that touched all this off with his psychologically disadvantaged talk 15 months ago, part of the calculus was he wanted a conference championship game, he wanted a conference network, and he wanted expansion. I think he wanted expansion because you needed expansion to do the other two things, he thought at the time.
Right.
The old rule on conference championships was you had to have two divisions and at least 12 teams. And then they've changed that now to where you don't have to have that. So they can do a conference championship, and in fact they're going to, with 10 teams. They're probably going to split in two divisions. They're still figuring that out. The other thing was he really wanted a conference network, and he believed, and he was probably right, that in order to do a conference network, you're going to need more inventory, flat out more inventory. You're going to need two more teams at least in order to provide the inventory, and also probably the extra footprint in terms of TV eyeballs if you move to a different part of the country. When they found out in June from the TV partners that there was zero interest, basically, in doing a conference network, then all of a sudden, I think, between that and the fact that you didn't need 12 teams to do a conference championship game, I think he was a lot less enthused about expansion. Or at least it caused him to, okay, if I'm going to think about expansion, I need to think about the value of these schools a little differently now.
No, there was a lot to drink in. I listened to the podcast. I read your article. I never thought I'd be this much informed on a topic like this. But I know you've got the weekend off. My advice would be, A, enjoy your family. B, make sure you have enough batteries for the remote so you can catch all the action. You travel safe, and we'll catch up with you next Wednesday.
It's not completely. It's not really off. It's just home. So I'll be doing some work, which is cool. I'm glad of that. But I'll be glad to be home. So. I always enjoy talking with you. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one, George.